Anatomy and Physiology, Gulf Coast State College. We're going to continue our discussions on chemistry, and today we're going to break into organic compounds. Now, a lot of students freak out when they hear the word organic chemistry, but again, don't give yourselves a mental block. I always found it to be the most interesting. I loved organic chemistry. Maybe I'm just different, I don't know. I'll let you be the judge of that, but these are the compounds that are some of the most important for life itself. So we're going to break it down into sections, and today we're going to talk about carbohydrates. Let's start with some general definitions about organic compounds. In general, they are large and complex. Also, they all contain carbon, period. So you can make that a general rule for our course. And those carbons are most often bonded to other carbons or hydrogen. Almost all those bonds are covalent bonds. Notice right off the bat when you're studying, when you're trying to get the big picture, these general definitions on this slide are very different from the general definitions that we reviewed on the inorganic compound slides. Furthermore, some of these organic compounds, many of them, do not dissolve in water very easily, and that's a good thing, because or else we really would melt in the rain. Let's take a look at the four major organic compounds we'll study one at a time in that order. First, as I mentioned, we'll look at carbohydrates in this discussion. Next time, we'll pick up with proteins, followed by lipids, and here's one of our nice fill-in-the-blanks to keep us interactive as we go through these discussions. And finally, we'll talk about something called nucleotides. So let's focus on carbohydrates today. I love the name. What's in a name in anatomy? A lot's in the name. Many times you can figure stuff out from the name if you know the Greek and Latin root words, even if you don't really know what it is. So give an example. Carbo refers to carbon, hydro refers to water, so carbohydrates literally means watered carbon. And that tells you exactly what it is. It gives you a hint as to what the chemical formula is going to be. So I love the names in anatomy. Again, they often almost tell you something about location and or function. So sure enough, carbohydrates, they're composed of carbon and water. And in slang, some people refer to carbohydrates as watered carbon. The general formula is CH2O, which, as you know, H2O represents water, C represents carbon, and there's your watered carbon in a formula, E. The main function of most, not all, but most carbohydrates in human beings is it is our prime source of chemical energy, and we'll study that in great detail. Let's break down the carbohydrates into some categories. First, we'll break it down into the simple sugars. These include monosaccharides and disaccharides. Again, let the names help you. Mono means one. The root word saccharide refers to sugar. So we'll see these are sort of single component sugars. And then the other type of simple sugar is a disaccharide. That means two sugars, and sure enough, those will be composed of two different components, just like the name tells you. Finally, we'll look at the polysaccharides. Poly means many. Again, the root word saccharo refers to sugar. So these are composed of many molecules of sugars all strung together in a big long chain, and they include things like starches, and then the most important one in the human body we'll study is glycogen, and finally we'll take a look at cellulose as well. Let's begin with the monosaccharides. They're the simplest of the simple sugars because they only consist of one piece, and they're grouped according to the number of carbons. There are many more that I'm going to list here on this slide, but I just felt that was too trivial for our course, so I'm just going to ask you to know the two groups of monosaccharides that are most important for
our bodies.
Number one, we're going to look at some pentoses. Pent, the root word pent, like pentagon, means five, and sure enough, pentose sugars have five carbons. And then we'll look at hexoses. If you know the root word hex, like hexagon, it means six, and the hexoses will have six carbons. While we're discussing the pentoses, if you wish, there's a figure from your textbook in the lower right that you can enjoy while we're having our discussion. But don't worry, I'm not going to ask you to be able to draw them. Just know the main bullet points that we're going to go over. There are two pentoses that are important for the human body. The first one is called ribose. It's important because this is the pentose. This is the five-carbon sugar that's found in RNA, which is ribonucleic acid. Some of you may know from high school biology that these are very important to the body, such as in the production of proteins. The chemical formula you see there, yes, you should be able to recognize it. You may call it either C5 with an H2O in parentheses 5, or you may call it or be able to recognize it as C5H10O5, which fits our general formula. The second very important pentose in the human body is deoxyribose. It's important because it's the pentose found in DNA, which you know is our genetic material. It's kind of the oddball, it's the odd man out because it doesn't fit the general formula on the other page, but the name tells you why it doesn't fit or how it doesn't fit. It's called deoxy. The root word D means to remove or undo something. Like if you destabilize a country, you undo the stability of a country. So deoxyribose means we remove an oxygen from the ribose. So it's missing an oxygen. Therefore, the chemical formula is a little bit different. It's C5H10O4. Another thing I want to mention about these pentose sugars is pretty much they're the only sugars we'll talk about that are structural sugars. In other words, these aren't sweet sugars that we have in our foods or whatever to eat. So that's kind of different about pentoses as well. And we'll look at how they form the structure of RNA and DNA at the very end of our discussion of organic compounds. Now we move on to the hexoses. These are the ones that really give us a lot of our energy. The first one we'll look at is glucose. You should know glucose is the main blood sugar. When you go to the doctor and you measure sugar, they're measuring your blood glucose. When diabetics check their sugars, they're checking blood glucose. Chemical formula, you see it down there, you should be able to recognize that or write that. I'm not going to ask you to draw it, thank goodness, but you should be able to know the formula. You may say either C6 with H2O in parentheses 6 or C6H12O6. Just as a reminder, I threw a little clip art over there for fun of a drop of blood and a needle to help you remember, hopefully, that glucose is the main blood sugar. The second hexose we'll talk about is fructose. This is typically referred to as fruit sugar. Again, chemical formula is the same, C6H12O6. There are some differences. If you look at the drawings of these chemicals on a sort of technical basis, but that's too trivial for our course. If you're a purist and a chemist, you go check them out. That's fine. I just want you to know it's C6H12O6. I put some more clip art there. There's a slice of an orange, and that's just to remind you fructose is our fruit sugar. Finally, the last hexose that we'll look at is galactose. And root word lact, by the way, means milk. So hopefully you would guess that galactose is the hexose that is found in milk sugar. And I threw a little clip art. There's a glass of milk off to your lower right to hopefully help you remember that galactose is the monosaccharide which is found in milk sugar. Now, here's a key point at the bottom, got double red stars around it, so obviously it's something to know. Again, just because it's a fill in the blank or just because I put a red star in it doesn't mean it's necessarily a test question. It might be, but it just means it's something we should all know and remember from this course, even way on down the line. Galactose and fructose are converted by the magical metabolic powerhouse of an organ known as the liver to glucose for our cells to use. So even though we ingest sugars as fruit sugar and milk sugar, our cellular fuel of choice, as you will see down the road, is glucose. Our cells love to eat glucose for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So our body, specifically our liver, will convert galactose and fructose into glucose so our cells will have their favorite food to eat. This is a drawing. Don't get nervous on the slide. Calm down, relax. First of all, I drew it myself. It wasn't in the textbook anywhere like this, so I'm kind of proud of it. It's harder than you think to make this drawing. Anyway, enough of that. This is one way to draw glucose. I just wanted to throw it in there. Again, I'm not going to ask you to regurgitate this drawing, but you should know the chemical formula, of course. The thing about glucose and the reason your body loves to use it as its cellular fuel of choice, look at all these hydrogens attached to those carbons by those covalent bonds. Remember, in general, when we talk about bonds, there's energy in them, our bonds. But furthermore, those hydrogens you see on glucose, those are high energy hydrogens. Glucose has many high energy hydrogens. That's why it's the body's cellular fuel of choice. Okay, we're done with monosaccharides. Let's take a look at the disaccharides. The first thing on this slide is just a reminder of the root words. I don't put root words on the test as a specific test question, but you should know what they mean. Of course, di means two. And it kind of reminds me of that movie, and I'm not, plugging this movie or saying anything, any commentary about it. But there was this movie, I think it was called My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and what struck me in that movie was kind of funny, is the grandpa in the movie, I think whenever his daughter brought a boyfriend home, he would, or anybody came in the house, he would challenge them to give him any word, and he would break it down to its Greek root words because he was very proud of his Greek heritage. And he, sure enough, in that movie, he could break any word down into its Greek root words. And the point is, if you can do that too, you can figure a lot of stuff out, even if you don't really kind of know it, so to speak. As the name tells you, they are composed of two monosaccharides bonded together by a process called dehydration synthesis. Let's look at dehydration synthesis as far as breaking down the words. D means to undo or remove something. Hydra means water. So we're going to remove water. And in the process of removing water, we're going to synthesize something. We're going to create something by removing water molecules. So I love that term, and we talked about that before when we discussed chemical reactions. The disaccharides we'll look at one at a time in order. Number one, we'll take a look at sucrose, followed by maltose, followed by lactose. And that's your fill in the blank, lactose, at the bottom of the slide. Sucrose. Put up a picture there for you, because sucrose is essentially table sugar, so hopefully that little piece of clip art there will help you remember that it's table sugar. What's it made of? Well, it's made of two things. The two things are glucose bonded to fructose by dehydration synthesis. And I'll show you an example of that on the next slide. On the next slide also, very important to compare dehydration synthesis and hydrolysis. These are processes that occur all the time in the human body, and you should understand not just their meanings and their definitions, but you should really have an understanding of how they work. So let's do it one time together on this next slide. So what do we have here in this picture? To your far left, there is a molecule of glucose. Remember, that's one of our monosaccharides. And here is a molecule of our other monosaccharide called fructose. We're going to try to put them together and form a molecule of the disaccharide known as sucrose. So here's how we do it, through the process of dehydration synthesis, and it is exactly what it says it is. In dehydration synthesis, what we're going to do is take this molecule of water. Yep, there's some advanced PowerPoint. Don't try that at home, or you might hurt yourself. Let me show you that again in case you missed it. Check this out. Boom. All right, there. I love playing with the PowerPoints. Shaded in green, and now with my red oval, we have H2O. And if we remove that molecule in the process of dehydration synthesis, we're going to form a covalent bond between those two molecules and create a molecule of the disaccharide known as sucrose. So there it is. It's as simple as it says it is. What about the opposite process? Notice this is a reversible reaction, isn't it? Yeah. Well, the opposite process is what happens when you eat during digestion. When you eat, let's say you take a tablespoonful of sucrose or table sugar, and then we're going to add a little water in our intestines to that. We're going to also add some digestive enzymes, and we'll get to that way later on in the course. But we'll add some water, some digestive enzymes, and through the process of hydrolysis, by adding that water, we're going to bust it apart. Remember, hydro means water, lysis means to break apart. So we're going to bust apart sucrose into its two components, glucose and fructose, by mixing it with water. You've seen it if you put sugar and water in a glass. I mean, that's what will happen, right? It will dissolve into water. And you know, we can think about also, if you let that glass of water sit out and dehydrate, you know, maybe over the course of a week, eventually the water will dehydrate out of there, and then the sugar crystals, right, they'll form on the walls of the glass and on the bottom of the glass. So maybe that's another way to think about it, if that helps you. Not exactly what's happening in the human body, but maybe a cool analogy for y'all. Okay, the next disaccharide we'll talk about is maltose. I threw a little clip art down your lower right. There's some grains over here, and that's because maltose, which is also known as malt sugar, is the sugar that is found in grains. What is maltose chemically? Maltose is composed of glucose bonded to glucose by dehydration synthesis. So I kind of remember that because maltose starts with an M, and maltose is a mixture with an M of two of the same things. Glucose plus glucose makes maltose by the same process we showed on the other page. So maltose is a mix of glucose and glucose. Finally, lactose. I threw some clip art down to the right there again. Show some dairy products because it is our milk sugar. And by the way, I like ice cream. I love Dairy Queen ice cream cones. I'm not trying to plug Dairy Queen. But anyway, lactose is milk sugar. Lactose chemically is composed of glucose and galactose bonded by dehydration synthesis. Couple of memorization tips here. Notice, while you're studying this, glucose was one of the components of each of the disaccharides. So you got that down. And then in this case, I think it's easy to remember galactose is the second monosaccharide that's needed to make lactose because it has the root word lactose in it. So lactose is glucose plus galactose. Just as a little aside here, for those of you thinking this isn't relevant, many people are what we call lactose intolerant. What does that mean? That means that they're missing a digestive enzyme in their guts. The enzyme's called lactase. By the way, enzymes often end in the three letters ACE. Whenever you hear the word ACE, A-S-E, it's almost always an enzyme and it's busting apart something. And lactase, sure enough, bust apart lactose. So people are missing lactase. If they go out and eat Dairy Queen ice cream cone, what happens is their guts can't digest the milk sugar because they're missing the enzymatic machinery. But bacteria in their guts are more than happy to digest the milk sugar. And what they do in the process is they break it down into various components as they sort of ferment it, if you will, and produce gases, and you get cramping and bloating and so forth and so on. And you can even go, people who are lactose intolerant, they can go to Walmart and buy a box of Lactaid, and if you read the box of Lactaid, all it says on it is lactase. It's just the enzyme. So if people are lactose intolerant, supposedly you go to the store, you buy your Lactaid, you pop a couple of pills, and then you can have your Dairy Queen ice cream cone. Now, it's not as simple as it sounds. It doesn't necessarily work 100% like that. So it doesn't mean like you go out there and have like a case of ice cream just because you popped a Lactaid pill. Let's move on. Let's talk about the polysaccharides next. Let the name help you. Poly means many and saccharide means sugar. So these are many sugar molecules strung together in big long chains. Root words, very important to know. What we're going to do when we make polysaccharides is we're going to take monosaccharides, we're going to bond many of them together by our good old friend dehydration synthesis. These are often referred to as complex carbohydrates. You may hear that term. Usually these are insoluble in water. That means they don't dissolve well in water. And they're usually not sweet either, by the way. For example, one of the complex carbohydrates or polysaccharides we're talking about are starches, are common in our diet, like pastas and potatoes. And they sort of fit all these bullet points here. I mean, they don't dissolve well in water. I mean, you can't really dissolve a spaghetti in water. And they don't taste sweet either. So maybe that'll help you remember a couple of these interesting points about our polysaccharides. Okay, so we're going to look at several polysaccharides in order. Number one, we are going to take a look at those starches, followed by glycogen, a very important polysaccharide to the human body. And then we'll end up with something called cellulose. Let's start with this picture of a polysaccharide to demonstrate a couple of points. Number one, each one of these purple hexagons is supposed to be representing a monosaccharide. In this case, it's a monomer or a single piece of glucose. Mono means one, mer means part. And if we string a whole bunch of glucose molecules together with covalent bonds, we get a polysaccharide. That polysaccharide, by the way, is called glycogen. So let's go and look at starches. Starches are the form in which plants store carbohydrates, and then we eat them. I threw some clip art down to the right. There's a big bowl of pasta down there, and you bet in that pasta there's a whole mess of starch in there. How do plants create these? Well, it's through our old friend, the process of photosynthesis that many of us may have studied in grade school. And what plants do in photosynthesis is they form the high energy compound starch by using energy from the sun. These are the major carbs in our diet, such as pastas, such as potatoes, just like that plate of pasta I put down there for you. You'll see general principle is that we cannot create or destroy energy. We can just change its forms. And when we get to metabolism, we'll get really, really specific on that. And unfortunately, when it comes to starches, when we digest them, we don't really create or destroy all the energy or all the calories that are in there. We just change its form. And again, unfortunately, what we usually change it to is sugars or fats. And that's why, you know, diabetics don't necessarily think eating a plate of pasta is going to raise their sugar, but that's what happens. The body quickly metabolizes it into sugar, and it can raise your blood sugar way up high. And if you eat a whole bunch of pasta, not only does it convert it into sugar, your body also converts it into fat. And that's why we can gain a lot of extra weight by ingesting too many excess calories from foods such as starches. Let's talk about our second polysaccharide, glycogen. Remember, glycogen is just many molecules of glucose strung together. Glycogen is the form in which we store carbohydrates. That's key. You should underline and highlight it, even though I didn't. This is how we store carbs in the liver, which is one big place we store it, and in muscle tissue. I put a piece of a torso down here from a cadaver to show you a whole bunch of muscles, and sure enough, in those muscles we can store a lot of carbohydrates as glycogen. The amount of carbohydrate storage in our bodies is limited, and excess carbohydrates, as I mentioned previously, are unfortunately converted into fat and stored in adipose tissue, which is fat tissue. And we have sort of, I guess you call it, an amazing ability to store excess calories as fat. The fat cells in our fat tissue have essentially almost an unlimited ability to store excess calories as fat. That's why if we go out and eat, you know, 6 pepperoni pizzas, and you know, then have 6 ice cream cones and a 6-pack of Pepsi, that's why we can go to 500 pounds and 700 pounds and 900 pounds, all because of that bullet point right there. The final complex carbohydrate we'll talk about is cellulose. I put a little clip art down to the right here. Now, I know what that is down there, and I don't condone this behavior, of course, in any way, but I wanted to find, you know, a plant that would represent where cellulose is. So there's a little stalk of celery, right? And cellulose is the fiber content in our food. It is found in the cell walls of plants, like our little celery stick here. We cannot digest it. Cows can, some animals can, but we can't digest it. Basically, for human beings, this is what my mom used to call roughage. In other words, fiber in our foods. You know, that helps us pass our bowel movements more easily. And of course, it's all in the news about how fiber is good and healthy for us. And that's why we're encouraged to eat certain fruits and vegetables and so forth. Usually at this point in time in my face-to-face classes, I'm asked by students, is this cellulite? What about cellulite? Is that the same as cellulose? And the answer is no. So if mommy and daddy ask you, since you know you're a big bad A&P student and you're real smart, if cellulose and cellulite are the same thing, they are not. What is cellulite? Well, cellulite is essentially excess fat. And what happens is when we get excess fat in our subcutaneous tissue, in other words, underneath our skin, it tends to pile up, and in between those little pockets of fat, they're sort of surrounded by little connective tissue fibers or cords that are trying to hold it down. But those fat pockets keep swelling and swelling and swelling, and they blow up those little pockets and stretch those little fibers and cords. So the fibers and cords, if you will, are kind of pulling down. They make those little dimples. And then, you know, you have that little pooching out of the fat in between the dimples. So you get that cottage cheese kind of appearance. Anyway, that's what cellulite is. there's a lot of stuff in the news now. People trying all kinds of treatments. I've heard, oh goodness gracious, people trying lasers and surgeries and liposuctions and creams and pills and radio frequency and ultrasounds. People trying all kinds of things. At the time of this recording, I haven't seen anything that's really sort of a miracle cure. At least at the time of this recording, the best treatment that I'm aware of is just, you know, having a proper diet and being at a proper weight. But in any case, that's cellulite for those of you who wanted to know. I think that's where we'll stop on the carbs. Next time we get together, let's do some proteins.